Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. Everyone, welcome into the program today. Because today, it's Friday, I hope you all had a great week and you are ready for the weekend. But before we send you out there, we want to send you off with some news. You know, some good, happy tech news. Because that's really a rarity and an oddity. I know that lately, you know, looking at the tech stories, oh my god, it's all about the rough financial times everyone's going through. It's about scandals. It's too much about Elon. It's too much about just so many things that aren't really at the heart of what, you know, kind of brought me to technology in the first place. But I think Ralph Bond, he's our guest today. He's our science and tech trends correspondent. He does an amazing job, you know, kind of keeping that flame alive of, you know, what makes technology so cool to pay attention to, because it's not the personalities. It's not the drama. It's, hey, you know, just good, interesting, fun technology that, you know, we're somehow able to make. So Ralph will be joining us here in just a moment, but before we get to that, ComputerAmerica.com, that's where you'll find everything, including the show notes, very important. You'll find links to Ralph's site, you'll find links to our site, and of course, podcast, social media, all that kind of thing. You'll find all that at ComputerAmerica.com. Now, let's go ahead and just get things rolling here with, or I should say jumping. You'll find out why I'm using that instead. Everyone, let's go ahead and bring on Ralph Bond. Ralph, welcome back onto the program. How are you?
Hey, Ben, great to be back. And you're so right about every Friday. I love doing this with you because we can give some uplifting, hopeful, inspiring, and sometimes quirky science and tech news. So it's a great way to counterbalance the negativity that our news cycle is so full of these days.
For sure. And I always look forward to this. Before we get started, why don't we just tell the audience, you know, anyone who may be new, what your goal is when you look for these stories? Because, you know, just like everyone else, you have to sift through everything that we see, but you find the hidden gems.
I hope so. Yeah. So, Ben, I'm an aggregator of science and tech news features I find by monitoring a host of online news outlets. And I look for important and sometimes wild and wacky and out there sometimes stories that don't usually capture mainstream press attention. And I'm always on the lookout for news that gives a glimpse into where we're headed in robotics, medical technology, sustainable energy technology, transportation advances, space research, physics, you name it. And what I do with each news item is present the essential points, kind of the Reader's Digest condensed version. I realize a lot of our listeners are too young to know what Reader's Digest means. But anyway, and try to make it more digestible. And I stress to our audience to check out the show notes, as you mentioned. Please go out and get the show notes if you're at all interested in pursuing what we're talking about to a deeper level, because we, again, just give the highlights. Maybe have a video, maybe have a picture. But if you really want to dig into the science, you need to read the articles and some of the references linked to those articles. So do that and get those show notes, and then you're going to be in great shape going forward with today's stories.
Definitely. And for everyone out there who may not know what Reader's Digest is, how about Cliff Notes or Spark Notes? Or
there, you know, thank you.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yes, there
but,
you go.
But yeah, and earlier I, you know, changed it from get things rolling to get things jumping, because that leads into story number one. And Ralph, I don't know what your vertical is. My vertical is about somewhere between 3 and 5 inches. I have a great jump. I can jump inches at a time, but this robot may have me beat a little bit.
Yeah, this is a fun story from Smithsonian Magazine. Excuse me. The headline here is, there's a new robot that can jump a record-breaking 100 feet in the air. And again, from Smithsonian Magazine. So researchers at the University of California, Santa Barbara have designed a robotic device that can leap more than 100 feet in the air. And folks, that's three times the current record for a jumping robot. If you think about Boston Dynamics and other people like that, they have these humanoid-like robots or dog-like robots that can do some jumping, but nothing comparable to 100 feet in the air. So most jumping robotic systems are based on the body mechanics of extreme jumpers in the animal kingdom, such as the Galago, which is an African squirrel-sized primate that can jump 10 and a half feet high from a standstill. Think about that, 10 and a half feet up from a standstill. That's extreme, of course. So instead of trying to mimic these animal muscle mechanics for jumping, the UC Santa Barbara researchers took an entirely different approach, placing their 1 foot tall, bullet-shaped robot with its motor on top of four interconnected half-circle bows. And friends, you really need to see the imagery. You need to see the video and so forth to just understand what this thing even looks like. It's very hard to describe in words only. But here's how it works. The robot's small motor compresses or squeezes, if you will, the four carbon fiber compression bows, which in turn are linked together with large industrial strength rubber bands. And when the robot releases the compressed springs, the huge amount of stored energy launches the robot into the air. And I know that Ben is showing you the video right now, which is very helpful. So with this simple design, folks, the UC Santa Barbara robot can jump more than 100 times its own height, which again is about a foot tall robot. So approximately the height of a 10-story building. What? Mm-hmm. All right, time out. Is this just interesting mechanical stunt? Or could this be useful? Well, the UC Santa Barbara research team says this technology could be used to leap over tall obstacles on Earth. And that leaves you to think about many possibilities there. And then they threw in, and maybe in space, which I would assume meaning, of course, on planets. So imagine one of these things being deployed to Mars, for example, and being able to hop over or leap over very tall obstacles because, of course, their gravity on Mars is so much less than our gravity. So this thing could jump even higher, I suspect. But I also thought to myself, Ben, and see what you think, there could be some diabolical uses for this for military. Maybe for search and rescue purposes, for surveillance. I don't know. I mean, it's a curious thing to think about what this particular device might do in the real world.
Yeah. And, you know, the video that you linked to gave a lot of, kind of possibilities. What I'm showing here right now is towards the end of the video where they landed a lander in 2018 on a meteor, you know, not a lot of smooth ground on a meteor, I would assume.
Yeah.
So they had like this weird jumping mechanism that if it landed upside down, it could flip itself over and, you know, still stay there. Different ways to get around. As for possible applications, I am so like at a loss. I know that, you know, obviously different forms of propulsion are always going to be useful in some form. And just watching the video, highly encourage that. Like, it's just right there, and then just split second later, it's just off the screen. It's so fun to watch. Uses, hey, that's up for smarter people than me, but it's very, very cool to see.
It is. It's a kick. It's at least a mechanical feat that's really kind of fun. And you kind of think, why didn't somebody think of this before? But anyway.
you touched on that way at the beginning, was that, you know, because we're humans, we look at nature and say, who are the best jumpers and how do we replicate that? And this is taking it a little bit different. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I think they nailed it. It's very, very offbeat and very, very Ralph-esque. I like it. Story number one. Yes, I'm turning you into an adjective. Story number two. Let's go ahead and jump there.
Yeah. This one, the headline here, this is medical technology, which is a really keen area of interest for me. So scientists discover a gene that could be the cure for age-related hearing loss. Mm. And we'll explain that this is really a setting the stage. We're not saying we've achieved this cure, but it's a big step forward. And I had a couple of sources here, Ben. First, I picked up the story from the Daily Beast. But then I did more research by going out to Northwestern University's website itself. So I have two links there in the show notes. And before we get started, what we need to do is have a little high school science biology refresh lesson here, just to kind of tune up and get ready to go. Okay. And we've got a diagram here, an illustration of the human ear. So if you're watching this online right now, you can see what we're talking about. But first, here's the deal. Inside your inner ear, there's an organ called the cochlea, and it's sort of a purple color in the diagram that you're showing right now. Mm-hmm. And then inside this cochlea are thousands of tiny cells called inner and outer hair cells. Now, these are not actually hair, but they've been nicknamed hair cells, by scientists because they look like hair under a microscope. All right. So the job of these so-called hair cells is to collect and relay sounds to the brain, with inner hair cells picking up sound vibrations and the outer hair cells amplifying the sounds. So, no surprise, as we age, hair cells get damaged or destroyed, leading to hearing loss. And for years, scientists have been trying to figure out a way to reverse these effects. For example, to date, scientists have been able to produce generic artificial ear hair cells. But here's the key. They've not been able to date to make them into specifically inner or outer hair cells. So you can't just make a generic hair cell and think, okay, that's great. We can regenerate those in somebody's cochlea and away we go. No. It's much more complicated that you have to have them distinguish between inner and outer hair cells. So that's the problem to date. Well, drum roll, please, for Northwest University, which has just astonishing medical research, by the way. They've been on our show many, many times before in my segments. But anyway, in a major breakthrough that could eventually set the stage, and that's the key, eventually set the stage, we're not saying it's here today, for the development of a cure for age-related hearing loss, researchers at Northwestern University recently announced that they have uncovered a gene dubbed TBX2 that works as a genetic master regulator that can make inner and outer hair cells. So you see, that's the key. They now have figured out a way to make inner versus outer hair cells to make distinguishing hair cells. While this research was conducted on mice, no surprise, the Northwestern University scientists believe this genetic mechanism or process would be similar in humans and could someday be a game changer for reversing hearing loss. And then there's a reality check, and this is not my reality check, this is the researchers themselves. They noted that even if we can reprogram hair cells in humans, it's not a definite cure. For inner and outer hair cells to work properly inside the cochlea, they need to be in the correct positions in the cochlea and hooked up to the body's nervous system. So those are very significant hurdles yet to be accomplished. But what a significant research step forward and a beam of hope for the future. So applause again to Northwestern University. I tell you, I tip my hat off to these guys and gals.
For sure. And, one more little reality check, but here at the bottom of the Northwestern press release, they also mentioned here that now that they can, define, inner or outer, they can now research the inner ear ones more, by actually making them and find out why they are more prone to dying and cause deafness. So now that they can do that, they can now really hone in on the, really hone in on the research and really figure out why this is happening. So huge step forward, like you said, not a cure, but hey, this is this is one step that they needed. This is great.
Yeah, and another side note in terms of the research that I picked up in doing additional research on this story is that it also, in an interesting way, this discovery is going to help scientists understand the evolution of our hearing mechanisms. That's kind of curious too. I wasn't quite sure how that does that for them, but that was a mention made in a couple of articles on the side that I researched as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it has everything to do with genetics and this, this gene. Very, very cool. And hey, that's great. So story number two, story number three, let's go ahead and, kind of keep it going with, and sometimes, Ralph, between when I talk, I just kind of read the title and look for keywords to kind of string them together. I read Scientist Urine Feeding World, and I it was hard to come up with a sentence that didn't sound very, very weird. So I'll just let you do story number three.
Yes, it's hilarious because the headlines here lead you to think, wait a minute, what are they saying to you here?
The French, what are they up to?
Yeah, what's this all about? I know they're into some interesting cuisine, like eating snails and stuff, but wait, no, time out. So the headline here, folks, French scientists say your urine could be a key to feeding the world. And of course, the first blush thought is, what? Do they want me to drink urine to nutrition? What are we talking about? No. Got this from the U.S. Sun, meaning the online edition of the UK Sun newspaper is what we're talking about here. There's the link. And basically what we have here is there's recently a group of researchers in France, and this group goes by OCAPI, which in French is a long string of an acronym here. Mm-hmm. You can check that out if you want. But this group is dedicated to investigating food systems and human waste management. And they recently came out with a position advocating reusing human urine as our best option in the future for fertilizing farm fields in an environmentally friendly way that doesn't waste water or contribute to climate change. So it's not that we in the science community haven't known that urine contains some properties that could be good for fertilizing plants. That's not the point. They're just coming out with a strong position that this should be looked at more seriously and action taken. So let's go on, though. I learned a lot from researching this and other articles related to this topic. So a lot of man-made fertilizers using synthetic nitrogen can be harmful to the environment for a host of reasons. Mm-hmm. The French scientists think human urine could provide a sustainable, climate-friendly alternative source, for key nutrients in these man-made fertilizers, as our urine contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, which plants need to grow. And this group in France contends that using human urine would be a far less expensive approach than man-made fertilizer. And here's the key, making it more accessible for farmers worldwide, because you can imagine there's a crisis worldwide for fertilizers for fields when you're talking about synthetic, right?
Yeah, and wherever there are people, hey, you'll have access to this.
Well, yeah. And here's my kind of take on this after looking at this article and some other related ones. This research or this position they recently came out certainly makes a strong case for supporting an aggressive expansion of the application of existing technologies we already have in hand and are being used today for the extraction of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium from wastewater. There's, by the way, the extraction of nitrogen and phosphorus involves one process, and the extraction of potassium from sewage or wastewater involves another process. But we have this technology in hand, and it's been deployed to some level globally. But I think my takeaway from this is saying, hey, let's get more serious. Let's more investment. Let's see about deploying this more widely to see if it could make a practical and affordable fertilizer alternative to man-made one. So kind of interesting and quirky.
It's very, very important. And obviously we've, with artificial meat that's come up on our shows before, hopefully, and we know how much damage the meat industry and the beef industry kind of causes for, the entire ecosystem. Hopefully as that starts to wind down a bit, kind of scale it back a bit, we're going to need fertilizers from other places. And hey, like you said, we're already extracting this. It's just a matter of, actually making an effort to utilize it in an effective way. So very, very cool. And luckily no one has to Bear Grylls their way to a better tomorrow. So that's good. Bear Grylls, of course, is the survivor who likes to go out into the wild and advocates drinking your own urine in extreme situations. So
There's a TV show called Better Call Saul, which is a prequel to Breaking Bad, which you may or may not be familiar with. And in one part of one season, Saul Goodman, aka Jimmy McGill, is out in the desert in this horrible situation with another person, and they're out there for days in the broiling hot sun in the Mexican desert, and he finally breaks down and starts drinking a canister of his own urine that the other guy said, please save your pee, buddy, because this could save your life, and lo and behold, it does. So
it's well, hey, and this is much less disgusting because hey, it goes directly onto farms and it's very, very good. And we had a story a week or two ago about another process that supposedly just waste and just just kind of useless material that we kind of have to deal with turns into actual useful stuff. And so that seems to be a theme, just recycling, reusing. Always a good thing. So
story number now. And hey, Ben, by the way, Ben, before we leave this story, I also, in my tangential research around this story, found out that some what we call extreme gardener enthusiasts have been urinating on their plants for years and years and years. I mean, apparently this is something that the in crowd in the gardening scene, if they're willing to do this, will go out and do that. They will do a sprinkling for the May Queen, as Led Zeppelin used to
say. You know, and it really makes you think, like, you know, I'm sure that there's one camp that's like, play classical music, the plants like it, it helps them grow better. Yes, and the other, yes. And the other camp is like, just pee on them, just assert your dominance and just whiz as you will. I don't know what planters are up to, but there you go. Story number three, story number four. Let's go ahead and jump on over here to, and aliens.
Yes, this is a fun one. Comes from ArsTechnica.com, a wonderful outlet, by the way. And the headline here is, scientists will broadcast Earth's location into deep space later this year with the hope of reaching aliens. And again, Ars Technica, you got the link there. But I also did some further research by going out to the organization's website. That's source 2 in the show notes. But let's dive into this. So for more than 70 years, that's really something to wrap your head around for a moment. For more than 70 years, astronomers with a program called SETI, S-E-T-I, which stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, I think you're very aware of that, have been scanning for radio or optical signals, searching for extraterrestrial intelligence. So that's been a passive receptive process, right? Mm-hmm. Listening. And most scientists, I love this little nugget that came out. Most scientists are confident that life exists on many of the 300 million potentially habitable worlds in the Milky Way galaxy. Let that sink in for a moment. It's astonishing. Hey, you know, all this business about the, all this business about releasing the UFO video our government now is sharing publicly and so forth. It really does make you stop and think, oh, well, anyway. But so far, no signals, that's talking about the SETI program, so far, no signals from another civilization, have ever been detected. A mystery that is called in the science community, the Great Silence.
Of course.
So in October 4 of this year, an international team of scientists with METI, M-E-T-I, which stands for Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, will transmit powerful radio messages from the Goonhilly, that's G-O-O-N-H-I-L-L-Y, Goonhilly Earth Station, which is located in southern England, to TRAPPIST-1. TRAPPIST-1, a star system known to be orbited by at least 3 potentially habitable planets. And the messages, this I find really interesting. I'm not surprised by the fact that they're going to send out music samples. That seems sensible. And other stuff. But they're also going to send out scientific tutorials outlining the environmental threats facing the Earth. And I'm thinking, well, is it maybe hoping these super genius aliens might have a solution for us? I'm not quite, it's a curious choice of what they're sending out. And then last but not least, separately from this article, I did some further research and I really would like to get this triple confirmed, but one source said, well, this is all well and good, but TRAPPIST-1 solar system is 39 light years away from us. So this other source said it would take 78 years for any reply to reach us, which is what I assumed to mean to say 78 years for it to get out there to TRAPPIST-1. And if somebody wants to answer, for that answer to come back. Right. But I hesitate a little bit because I haven't been able to fully completely confirm this, but it's interesting to consider.
Well, obviously, the radio waves that we would send out travel at the speed of light, so it would take 39 years to get there, and then, of course, another 39 to hear a reply.
Oh, there you go.
So we would need to wait 80 years before we would actually hear anything.
I know. It's so frustrating because I don't think I'll be here.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, they have some great Kierzegatz. I don't know if you know that YouTube channel. They do, like, funny animations and, you know, on serious topics. They have a lot of stuff about alien communication and the chances that we'll actually hear and see something. I feel like, you know, especially stories like this, it's you know, really fun. But at the same time, you kind of have to think about, you know, space is unfathomably large, because even if we get a response, you know, in 80 years, I mean, hey, that's great. We can start up a nice little dialogue and hopefully have a continuous stream of, you know, conversation. And that's like best case scenario. Getting out there, ooh, you're talking, you know, thousands and thousands of years to even, you know, start to get out there.
Yep.
Traveling light years is just not really in our, you know, in our neighborhood. But Ralph, I'll leave you with one more question. Do you think we should be, you know, kind of letting people know that we're here? Like, are you in the idea that aliens are good and, you know, our neighbors are more the merrier, whatever? Or are you worried about aliens? You know, hey, they might want our nice little blue marble.
Well, yeah, you raise a good point, because actually in another example of tangential research I'll do around some of these stories, I did find some articles that about this topic, because this outlet, Ars Technica, was certainly not the only one that covered the stories. But in other coverage, that issue was raised, that there's many people who say, well, I get it. It's enticing and it's kind of irresistible to send out these messages. But, you know, should we really be knocking on the door of unknown forces out in the universe that may or may not have positive, positive motives for reaching back to us? So, you know, there's a little bit of controversy.
Maybe one of those things where it's like, oh, another one of these, and they kind of wipe out humanity because, you know, hey, they see it all the time. And I got to give credit to Hollywood. You know, so rarely do they get things right, but there are movies like Contact and Interstellar that I think do a really good job of like science mixed with fiction based stuff. Hey, maybe this weekend, you know, people can go out there and, you know, watch a movie, do something fun, and catch up on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, Ralph, I want to thank you so much for coming on and doing this. This is, you know, this is perfect. A lot of great stories, and all of them good. Ralph, I hope you have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. It's always a blast.
All right. And everyone, we hope you have a great weekend, too. We will be back next Friday with Ralph, of course, and all next week with brand new shows, topics. We just did an interview with a company called, Candidate. There we go. Candidate. You should go check that out in the podcast. Until next time, everyone, have a great day. Thank you so much. Bye, everyone.